Of course, the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. We are coasting through the end game here on Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And we've been talking about this for quite some time. In this particular podcast, I'm going to go into another version of the end game that happened long ago that never happened. But you got all these groups banding around, piggybacking off one another, and they opened up the Pandora's box in Egypt. They call it the WikiLeaks revolutions. Cass Sunstein, or what is this Jewish boy's name? Let me see his name. Cass Sunstein, S-U-N-S-T-E-I-N. You know, he wants nihilists of the world unite. WikiLeaks. They're calling it instead of the color revolutions, which went stale, they're calling it the WikiLeaks, the Wiki revolutions. All online type stuff. Trying to cause revolutions in these particular countries, which is typical communist type stuff. And you got all the different communist groups there. Believe it or not, many of the different groups. Glenn Beck is actually named in Egypt. You know, Code Pink and all these different communist groups got together with the Muslims, and they've been with the Muslims off and on for a long time. It's now 2011. You're in February 2011. If you're having to put together a ragtag bunch of groups like that to swing a new world order, you've got problems. You've got problems. But the big event is war with Iran. And that event obviously hasn't happened. That is the event we're looking for, but this is machinations. Everything is speeding up into that event. What exactly is going on in Egypt and all the different groups? Well, everyone has a different story, and I think all the stories are partially correct. You've got the Cass Sunsteins who want to unleash the nihilist. You've got the different communist groups fomenting for revolution, and these areas are ripe for revolution. You have the Brzezinskis knowing that these areas could blow up, so why don't you blow up the population get ahead of the population and go ahead and create a problem to get a reaction, to get a solution, so you can ensure someone that's going to cooperate with you. You'll ensure someone more cooperative to you because these areas are ripe for some type of uprising. I think you have that going on in Tunisia, especially that going on in Egypt. I also think you have something else going on. Hosni Mubarak is very, very friendly with the Jew rabbits. In my enemies, the way I view our enemies, there's two divisions. Because I don't know that the red hippo's here. I know there's two divisions of pink rabbits. There's pink rabbit elitesters, there's pink rabbit banksters. And the bankster side, always Rockefeller, Rothschild, they always are, you know, the Jew rabbits are on their side whether they like it or not. And what I believe is, what I believe right now, is that there's been a breakup. And there's always, you know, there's always multiple different opinions and views within that side. Push comes to shove, they'll come together, but there's always different opinions or views. But the Hosni Mubarak's, certain elites, certain pink rabbit elitesters and banksters have control, but they didn't have as much control as they wanted going into the war with Iran. This is what I believe. And so they want someone else in there for some reason or another. And also you have all these other factors. They want to try out the WikiLeaks revolutions. They want to experiment on that. They want to get ahead of a potential problem area in a country that they by and large support and have a lot of control. Egypt's military is considered a Western military by even the neocons like Charles Krauthammer. Yeah, he considers a Western military, i.e., they have a lot to, Jews have a lot of support there and that type of thing. But Hosni Mubarak, I don't know that they had leverage over him, but not enough leverage that they want into the next war. Now, what you're dealing with is internal pink rabbit politics, which really doesn't mean anything to us, but it is somewhat entertaining because, it's not unlike their elites, especially when you come into the elitesters, which are usually linked to European royalty. They're usually all related. We could go down their names. Some of them are traitors. Some of them are just treasonous swine. And some of them we have a big question mark over. I don't know what they are. Yeah, there's something wrong with them. But we went into all those speculations before, and that is raw speculation. But what you're seeing in front of your face is that... this group is, I believe, breaking off, and there's two main divisions. There's Pink Rabbit Banksters, Pink Rabbits Elitesters. And this is speculation, but since I've been asked to speculate on it, and since I keep getting these emails, I'll speculate on exactly what's going through my mind. But understand that I could be wrong. Just because I made some calls over this MP3 a year ago doesn't mean anything. The past does not equal the future when it comes to geopolitical speculations. But the Jews are armed to the teeth. Anyone that tells you differently is insane. And the reason Israel's been armed to the teeth, and when I talk about the Jews, I'm talking about Israel itself, is because America supports it. But I believe that there are elements that don't have enough leverage over Hosni Mubarak into the next war. What they're doing in Iraq as they do their pseudo-withdrawals, the American military pseudo-withdrawal, and they are withdrawing some things from Iraq, is they're building up the Iraqi military. The Iraqi military is quite big. Now, they might not be as well armed as they, maybe not even as they were underneath Saddam Hussein, but when you start talking about American air support and stuff like that in a war against Iran, I don't know how well armed you have to be. But this all has to do with war with Iran, and what it has occurred to me, and again, this is raw speculation that you've asked for. I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you my gut reaction. What you have is a group that should have had a New World Order based on anything we know to be true. When you go into the Jew rabbit's power in America, it is pretty absurd at the top. When it comes to the media, it's absurd. When it comes to how many newspapers they own, it's absurd. When it comes to Fortune 500 executives, it's absurd. You don't believe me? Go to IncogMan. Based on that, we could deduce that they should have had their New World Order long ago, because what's stopping them? Well, common sense would dictate if they don't have a New World Order yet, and they don't, that's why we're having this conversation. That's because there's something out there stopping them. Well, we've speculated on it before. There's no need to speculate anymore. I know who they are. I just don't know where they are. Yeah, we know who they are, but they've been held off. They cut some deal with some group after World War II, and they got themselves into trouble. And I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you, this is how I see it. Arminius leads the Romans in the Teutoburg Forest. It's a famous story in Western civilization. And after leading the Romans deep in the Teutoburg Forest, I'll do my rendition of what's been happening over the past 15 years. After leading them deep in the Teutoburg Forest, the Romans, which some Romans did think Arminius was... wasn't all on their side, but Arminius leads them into Teutoburg Forest. And as he leads them into Teutoburg Forest, some of the very smart Romans at the top, as they get deeper and deeper in, realize that we're in trouble here. We don't have our New World Order. We're in Teutoburg Forest. We're dependent on Arminius. And we're going to get screwed here. We're going to get annihilated. Someone has led us into a trap. And so in doing so, they make alternative plans. And what I'm talking about in the Pink Rabbit, you're talking about Pink Rabbit Elitesters. Something with some maneuvering room. And so they make some alternative plans. And I don't know exactly what these alternative plans are, but I do know you're seeing the machinations of it. And their alternative plans are like, look, the Romans are going to get annihilated. Yeah, they can make a good show of it. They're Romans. They got a lot of weapons, but they're going to get annihilated. We're in Teutoburg Forest. We need to make some alternative arrangements and cut whatever deal we have to save our to save ourselves. And let's face it, if you've been going, been successful for hundreds and actually thousands of years, maybe. Some of these groups, especially the elitesters, the European, the ones connected to European royalty, you're not going to go out overnight. You're going to be able to have a back door. You're going to be pretty sneaky. That's how they survived with us for so long, by being treasonous. and they are vipers. They'll sell out each other right, left, and center. But it looks like to me, and maybe even some of the Pink Rabbit banksters as well, have split off. And they cut the Romans loose. They cut themselves a deal, maybe with Arminius. Maybe there's more than one Arminius in the group, and they play good German, bad German. One German walks back and says, we'll give you guys a deal. And at the last minute, they just said, okay, you can have the Romans, you know, go devour them, go annihilate them. Something like that. If you read anything about Teutoburg Forest, there's nothing left of the Romans once it's done. But a smart Roman early on could do something, maybe to cut a deal if you're clever, maybe to save yourself. They've got to be pretty hesitant about any such thing because, in my opinion, Arminius would only cut a deal. Would only cut a deal with the Roman, the Roman emperors or the Roman generals, if he had plans to barbecue them at the end. You know, let's take out the Roman emperor and cut the Roman generals a deal right now because we want to savor them like fine wine at the end as we crucify them or something, you know. So I don't know the full story, but this is my gut feeling. This is raw speculation. They have cut the deal. And what you're seeing in Egypt, when you have these groups running around and the Glenn Becks, they're all going to be saying, look at all these useful idiots. The communists are useful idiots to the Muslims. So other groups are saying the Muslims are useful idiots to the communists. Why? Because the Muslims don't have near as much power. Yeah, the Muslims don't have any. What do they have? Well, they have third world countries. They have populations. They have big populations. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood is very, very organized. Yeah, Hezbollah is very organized. They have a society, actually. Both those groups have societies. But what had occurred to me is that this is part of some arrangement they made to get through the first act alive. And exactly how bad they've sold out elements of the Pink Rabbits, we won't know till the fur flies with Iran. And it is gearing up for that. Whether or not, at a blink of an eye, this could take a turn for the worst in Egypt. And it could become blatantly obvious this is going to be ugly. I don't expect that. I don't expect it to be that easy. I expect there to be a lot of different confusion. It's the fog of the end game still. But I think it's, in my opinion, it's starting to lift ever so slightly that someone's been sold out. That Pink Rabbit Elitesters are not going to go quietly into the night. They got a clue that they were being led into Teutoburg Forest and they cut some side arrangement. And you're seeing them, in doing so, they've cut the Romans loose and the Romans are now trying to get everything together to go to war to get through Teutoburg Forest. And the Romans in this case are the little Pink Rabbit banksters, especially the Pink Rabbits, the Jew Rabbits, the Jew Rabbit elites. As Soros said that they're, you know, he told Glenn Beck, quote unquote, you're either on board or you're not. So they've had to hurry up and put this package together, and this has something to do with it. Either something to do with, definitely something to do with Iran, but something to do with their end game. And I don't think it's any accident that it's Egypt either. The land of the pyramids. We've talked about Egypt. We've talked about the Hyksos. We've talked about the actual museum being built there. We've talked about all these different things. And it should be interesting to see what surprises come out of this. Because you don't want to be a Roman. You don't want to be a Roman in Teutoburg Forest. And you don't want to be a Roman if the Pink Rabbit generals have cut you loose. I mean, they plan on we don't care what happens to them. Do whatever you want to do. Just give us a deal. Do I believe they actually have a deal? No. No, I do not. I believe they, obviously, if Arminius has led you into Teutoburg Forest, how can you trust him? But you see, the Pink Rabbit Elitesters, they may not have a choice. So this is a lot of speculation, and this is going to be over, any new listener, this is going to be over your heads quite a bit, simply because you probably haven't listened to the whole entire podcast. This podcast is kind of a conversation, an ongoing conversation. That wasn't really supposed to go beyond 6 podcasts, and then wasn't supposed to go beyond 24 podcasts, but I kept on getting asked to do them, so I keep doing them. So it's an ongoing conversation. But that is raw speculation, and I could be wrong. But I don't think, I know I'm not wrong about war with Iran, and I know I'm not wrong about this having to do with the end game and war with Iran. But for the fog to fully lift for me, I gotta see an event. I gotta see the war for Iran, and right afterwards. What exactly happens in Pink Rabbit Camp? And I think most of the world's going to be very, very surprised. Now, what can I say about the new website? We got the new website up, and the new website, it looks good. It looks good. We'll be adding Mantra in all the different languages. We'll be adding more YouTube videos, and I'll be adding more podcasts. I'm working on several podcasts, but we got slightly detoured putting up a new website. We wanted to hurry up and get it up for all the action. All the little kitties running around wanting to know what's going on the planet. Well, I can send you down a path. That's about all I can do. But we'll be seeing it. You're seeing it. These blackouts, these rolling blackouts. In my opinion, the Obama administration did something quite intentional for this endgame. They shut down coal plants and started doing all these crazy environmental rules. It has to do with their end game and what they're going to try to spring. But, you know, old Bob Whitaker at WhitakerOnline.org has something. He always talked about this, and he talks about, especially in regards to the Jew rabbits, they chase that ring of power like Gollum. They follow it around. And if you know anything about the end of the Lord of the Rings, you know that Gollum chases the ring of power all the way into the fire. He jumps into the fire after that ring, and he jumps to his death, never realizing that he jumped to his death. That's the interesting thing about the end of Lord of the Rings. Gollum never realizes that he's going to die in a few seconds. I mean, he's dancing down toward the fire. He's dancing right off the edge of the cliff after that ring of power, grabs the ring on his hand, and he's getting burned alive and never realizes it. Interesting. It's also interesting to note that that the writer, J.R.R. Tolkien, called the Middle East the land of Mordor. It's interesting. Yeah, but all these groups that think they have a new world order, that, you know, the Muslim new world order, you'll hear about, there are dozens of variations. I've talked about this before. There's only two real competing groups. All these groups that think they have a new world order, well, you know, and then you have all the conservative side says, well, they're useful idiots, and then the liberal side will actually say, well, you're being useful idiots to this side for that, and all these people say that a certain group's a useful idiot. What they're going to find out at the end is all these groups have been useful idiots for something. That's how these things work. Going after the ring of power is quite dangerous, and we got one little group that wants to dance into the fire, and they're getting ready to dance. They got to have one last show of it. They got to go after that ring. What other news events can I talk about here besides the new website? But you can come back every few days. We'll be putting up all kinds of different YouTube videos going on. I've only made one YouTube video, and that video was the "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." It wasn't really a video; it was just a WAV file that I put to for Christmas that I put some very few graphics on, actually. So it wasn't really a video, I would say, but that's the only one I put up. All these videos you're going to see are from various different elements around the planet, and some of the videos that are really good have been taken down for weird reasons. Weird reasons like copyright infringement and everything else. YouTube isn't that friendly to white rabbits, but our message still gets out there because, by and large, there's nothing they can do about it. But we'll be putting up various different articles, and various different videos, as long as it pertains to white rabbit genocide or the mantra. We will keep putting this stuff up. And I've been asked about the cartoon. The cartoon will show up like the new website all of a sudden, all at once. Pow! It'll be on you. The Green Goddess will smack her tail and it'll be done. If it weren't for other factors on the planet, it probably would have already been done. But we're doing so much at once, we're doing so much at the same time, we can only get to things as they stand. There'll be new characters. You're seeing one of the characters from the cartoon. Her name's Halia. She's a good looking Aryan girl rabbit. You're gonna see other characters. You're gonna see full body shots. That'll be the next step. And at any time, we could put up some short clips, some short animations. It just depends on all these other crazy factors. But we'll be adding more. You've got all the mantra translations that are coming up. Mantra translated into, all different languages, German, everything else. We'll have different mantra videos. We got a mantra video in German you can watch. It's pretty simple, but we got all kinds of stuff coming up and going out. And come back often. But I may release short pieces into the end game, because that's what we're doing. We're coasting into the end game. We're coasting through it. You're in it. You're in about the first quarter, ready for the big dance. The big dance with Iran. What else do we have to say? Big terrorist attack on Russia. Every time there's a terrorist attack on the West, so-called West, the neocons said that the terrorists are evil murderer Muslims and everything else. Which I guess they are murderers. Every time there's a terrorist attack on Russia, it's because they're rebels. Yeah, they're rebels out there, and Putin's oppressing them. Yeah, they always want to blame the politicians in Russia. And in the West, in the United States or whatnot, the neocons have always blamed the Muslims. It's kind of odd. It's kind of funny. But Putin's calling this a double standard, saying that they want to take down Russia like the Romans wanted to take down Carthage. I think that's an interesting statement he made. Back in the day. But what they would like to do with these WikiLeaks, Wiki Revolutions are calling it, the online revolutions like they pulled in Egypt, they want to spread this to China, they want to spread this to Iran, and they want to spread this to Russia, and they're grooming someone in Russia to take over. Now, is that possible? Do I think, Oris, is that possible? If they have a super high-powered Antichrist, if the Red Hippo is real, if they got some alien god here, okay, you'll get a dance. You get a dance. You get 6 months to rule or whatever it is, but he ends up getting killed by a giant god or something that shows up here, right? Revelations? So I don't even worry about that either. Yeah. All these Christians talk about Talibama being the Antichrist. I hope he is. Because then we know what God looks like, and we already know how it ends, don't we? There's going to be all kinds of chaos. One of the things that concerns me about America is the rolling blackouts. They have it planned because their whole entire end game, their whole entire New World Order, which is all communist, but it's environmental stuff. And they want to say, white rabbits eat too much food, white rabbits use too much electricity. They want to run down this particular path. And they're going to create a lot of fear, a lot of panic, a lot of pandemonium. But we'll look for one event, and we'll look for the break, the light coming through the fog right afterwards. And that event is the war with Iran, and we are picking up speed into it. At any given time, the fog could lift. I do not expect, heavens knows that Israel can defend itself, but I don't expect this to go the way most people would think it would go. I expect there to be vast surprises among Team Pink Rabbit. I expect it to be full helter-skelter pandemonium once these events happen. That they're expecting A, B, C, D, E, and they're going to get H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T. That's what I expect. But we'll keep this conversation alive. In this particular podcast, I'm going into another funny episode. I'm going to go into when they thought they had their last New World Order. Many of the same groups, by the way. All the same groups or splinters of those groups. I'm going to talk about it. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny because at one time I was scared to death they were going to have their New World Order at a time when they should have had it, based on everything I knew to be true. And then we're going to talk about professors. I'm going to talk about dealing with PhDs and their biases. I'm going to answer a question, but to answer a question, I got to go through a whole spiel. A question from a listener. But we'll be back with you here in a second, and we'll go into... I'll talk about one of their actual in-games that they had going before, or talk about their last time that they actually went for it. This time they're going a step further. They're actually looking to engage. So we'll keep this conversation alive, and you're coasting into the in-game with Horus the Avenger. And now a word from our sponsors. Horus, what can I buy to become the life of the party besides the Undercover Lover t-shirt? That is a question we always get asked. Well, you can always get yourself an Undercover Lover or a Green Goddess or a White Rabbit Radio beer stein. Yes, they've been reported to magically fill up on their own. Yeah, parties are just reported to overflow with beer. It's amazing. Amazing product, all for the very low cost of $23.99. Yes, And if you have problems getting up in the morning, you can always get yourself a White Rabbit Radio, Green Goddess, or Undercover Lover coffee mug. And it'll help you wake up faster. Yeah, this stuff is reported to work very, very well. And those are all for the low price of $15. And all the proceeds go to support our servers. So if you're having problems becoming the life of the party, get yourself a beer stein. You're having problems getting up in the morning, well, put yours truly in front of you. In front of you as you drink your morning coffee. And now back to our regular programming. I'm going to take a step back in time. And I'm going to talk to you about something interesting to answer your questions about the why certain groups of our enemy think they need World War III. I'm going to answer it, and I'm going to talk about a very scary time in our race's history. If I was terrified in the mid to late 90s, and how someone threw cold water on me. Yeah, so I was all bent out of shape, all hope is lost type stuff, and someone threw cold water on me. And what they did to throw cold water on me was quite interesting. And I'm going to take you back in time. And we're going to talk about one time in our race's history where our enemy should have had it lock, stock, and two smoking barrels. And what an attaché of their, what a little group attached to them. That this group is now metastasized into a very important key group on one of their planks, said the reason they didn't get their big deal done at the time. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about the Berlin Wall coming down. We're going to talk about larger-than-life events and different events our enemy thought and wanted to happen but never happened. We're going to talk about it, and I'm going to tie it into World War III and China and all the social engineering about China, you know, is incredible and amazing, and because they're using a similar template as we come into World War III to try to tie into America and China. These elites get together, and I'm going to talk about when China really got things going, and it's kind of common sense. It's in the mid-90s, late 90s. They were building up post-1978, but nothing like 1995 to the present. Or 1998 to the present. I mean, it's nothing like what we've seen from the mid-1990s after the Iraq War to the present. And we're going to talk about it. I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to lay it out for you. And I think many of you will find this quite interesting. And in that, I'll answer your questions about why World War III, why our enemy believes World War III is necessary to bring the world together, as they say. Yeah, they think killing a lot of people is necessary to bring people together. They're a little bit off the rockers, but be careful for what you wish. You know, that is the old Chinese prophecy, or Asian of some type. But I will start this process, and I think you'll find it kind of interesting. Let's go back in time, and I'll tell you a very scary episode for our race. And it has a funny ending. It has a funny ending, as best I know. And a lot of this is, you know, I'm putting together broad overviews because many of the details are not yet known. But there is something that is known. Our enemy doesn't have a new world order as of yet, as of this day. You know, I'm talking to you on January 19th, 2011, and they don't really have their new world order. So go figure. But if they didn't have their new world order, there has to be times when they went for it or times when they really got things geared up because they believe they had some big window of opportunity. And different groups within there don't necessarily all agree on when these opportunities came and went, but or don't always necessarily agree on how they get it done just as long as they get it done. But there can be some conflicts within Team Pink Rabbit, we will call it. But there's been windows opportunities, and they assume there was one big window of opportunity from 20,050, 2050, all the way back to maybe 1950 or shortly after World War II. I don't know exactly how they date things and things like that, but there is a reason. There is a reason for their madness, and the reason came out in another podcast I had done that you could probably listen to if you haven't heard this one yet. I don't know whether this is going to be... this podcast will probably be 61, so you're probably dealing with 60, and you're going to deal with our natural state, our natural religions, and why our enemy had such an elongated timetable. And it was really kind of an odd answer. The answer is that their hocus and pocus says that there's this huge dark overhang to the beginning of Aquarius. It's basically astrology. Is the reason that is the answer I've always gotten. I don't know if it's true. It is somewhat speculative, but that's the way they think. So go figure. But anyways, they had this big, elongated drawn-out time frame. And if you haven't, you need to go back and listen to 60, and you'll kind of understand that from their perspective. And in this elongated timetable, they would have golden opportunities to go for it. Now, if they ever got stuck, they could go big. They could develop bigger and bigger scenarios, bigger and bigger problems, or a big war like World War III, a variety of different ways to go about it, or different combinations. So they got things to do if you get stuck. You know, knock off alien invasions, an asteroid's going to hit Earth. These things have came out in public. I mean, Henry Kissinger has talked about stuff like this. Dr. Henry Kissinger, wild things, over-the-top things that they could do if they got stuck or in trouble. But at any given time, they could go for it if there was a golden opportunity. And toward the end of the 80s, we had a stock market collapse of 87. Then we had a mini crash. There was actually a mini stock market crash of, I want to say, 1989. And so there was a window. There was a window. They had created a window in the late 80s to early 90s. There was also communism, and communism had, the Berlin Wall was just coming down. And there was going to be several different flashpoints, several different opportunities, and several different approaches they could take. For instance, you don't have to necessarily bring one of these you might have heard of, where you bring America and the Soviet Union to the brink of nuclear war, and then aliens step in and stop it or something like that, or the Berlin Wall comes down and there's peace, but to get everyone in the planet together, they do a knockoff alien invasion. Sounds crazy, it sounds over the top, but actually they've talked about stuff like this. Ronald Reagan himself said, what would we do if there was an outside threat that we had to all pull together for? They actually have drawn up scenarios like that, as crazy as it may sound. But basically there was a golden opportunity, and the reason why it was such a golden opportunity is because there's no internet. There's no internet in the late 80s, early 90s. There's no internet at all. My enemy fully controlled the media. That means the newspapers, the television. It doesn't matter whether it's CNN or ABC, NBC, CBS. It was total control by our enemy. Our enemy controlled all the newspapers. They controlled everything we would see and be able to communicate with, basically. You know, you shut down the phone lines, the only information you're getting is on television. So one can only imagine how easy it would be, if you really think about it, if you've got some good next generation technology you're getting ready to roll out, which is that's what they're going to do. You could really pull some big scenarios and pull the wool over some people's eyes. So when the Berlin Wall came down, they got things ready to go. And what I was doing in the mid to late 90s, it looked like they were going to have another golden opportunity, and I was basically freaking out. Because let's face it, the mantra is basically, right now gone viral in somewhere like Iceland, but it's 2011. We're dealing with the late 90s. This thing was written, but I mean, you know, there's not really, you have a really demoralized, brain dead population in America, especially in Europe. I mean, there's no, the internet is just getting going. And so we don't have enough time. So they were going to, in my opinion, and this is somewhat speculative, they were going to launch it over, who knows? Who knows the different machinations, but they were getting all their stuff ready to go with one of their scenarios, one of their pink rabbit scenarios. The red hippo was getting ready to flash out. And, of course, you had the Asian collapse of the late 90s, right? And many of their scenarios involve a lot of turmoil financially, simply because it's very easy. There's always going to be some amount of turmoil in the financial markets, and it's very easy for a government to step in and take a small currency collapse and turn it into a huge one. In other words, they might not get the ball rolling, but once the ball is rolling, you can take a small financial catastrophe and turn it into a huge economic disaster by the government overreacting or misreacting or something along those lines. And that's what they bank on. I'm not saying they manipulate everything. They don't have to. The markets are wild and woolly enough. But they can, in the blink of an eye, screw things up so bad that to create a problem, to get a reaction, to get a solution. So there are many different combinations they can go with, whether it be war, financial collapse, or all of the above. But they were gearing up, and I was scared to death, and someone threw cold water on me. And the way they did it was quite interesting. I was introduced indirectly. I'd been doing some homework on the different groups that our enemy had brought out after World War II. Because if you're going for a New World Order and you understand what it is, and you're going for White Rabbit Genocide, and then you're going for the total blended humanity, and then, of course, you're going to blend humanity with animals and everything else, you don't... I'll actually go into that in this podcast. I'll answer those questions too. But so hold on for a while. I'll prove it to you. You can watch something, and I will definitely prove this stuff to you, where they're going with this. But if you're going to do that, you've got to go big. You've got to have some big scenarios, whether it be fake alien invasions or something. You got to really think this thing through, right? And so you've got to have a lot of different groups. And one of the things you're going to have to have different sci-fi groups putting things in science fiction. And to get people ready, you got to plant the meme, and meme is minimum, I think it's a minimum unit of meaning. In other words, you got to start planning this alien stuff way ahead of time. You got to start planning this, many of the new age concepts that we're under now, the green movement that came out of Nazi Germany in World War II, believe it or not. You've got to start planning that stuff wherever they're going to go with it, whether it be the green movement and all that type of thing. All their different New World Order stuff, you got to start planning it out ahead of time. You got to have a lot of different groups out there. But there's one group in the New Age, one group that I found that, and I'm speculating, but I'm 99.99% sure, was funded directly by my enemy. And they were one of the first to get going, and they've spawned off several groups, and they work with several other groups. I don't want to mention the actual group's name. But at the time, if you email me, maybe I'll mention it to you, but at the time, in the late 80s, they were extremely active, and in the early 90s, they were extremely active, because one of the branches to my enemy's New World Order is all this green stuff, which is just communism. And this group believes most of the world's problems could be overcome, all social justice, all inequality could be overcome by sharing. And once the planet comes together to share everything, in 3 years, we can be totally equal. And you could only imagine how they do that. But they're being totally serious. And they are a cross-blend of Blavatsky meets the modern social justice movement. Blavatsky is someone, I'll put up a link to her, but she's someone Hitler read. It's a wild mix of New Age stuff. And but one of my interests in this particular group, and this all ties in together, is the things going on at the time. They had a very good read on it. They talked about the stock market collapse, that there would be a couple stock market collapses, and these would be, and the world would have to come together because, you know, the stock market collapse were happening because of inequality. They talked about the different, ozone at the time, and this is something most of my listeners right now would have actually totally forgotten about. At the time, there was a hole in the ozone, and the hole in the ozone, was going to kill us and everything else. There was all this fear over the hole in the ozone because you white rabbit girls use too much hairspray and stuff like that, you know. And they were going down that angle at the time. But what I was able to do was read all their stuff from the mid-80s to late 80s to the early 90s. And it was kind of funny to see them lay out all this stuff. And my enemy at the time had, as far as visually going, you know, if you talk to the, if you look at the type of control they had in the late 80s, early 90s, I'm talking about what you see is what you get control. It's terrifying. It's terrifying how they could have that much control and not actually at least engage, at least go through with it, at least try to get their New World Order, because that was the last golden opportunity, in my opinion. But looking at this New Age attaché, which was putting out all kinds of wild stuff, which is kind of their job. Their job is to talk about all kinds of different stuff, aliens from other worlds helping us, all this New Age topic. They were one of the ones that helped spawn it in our enemy's camp after World War II. So I'm reading this, and I'm falling on the ground laughing because they didn't have their New World Order. And one of the things that came out in the material, and this is funny as hell, is he kept talking about Space Brothers. And this particular individual that runs the joint to this day is part Jewish. And he talks about meeting Adamski's Space Brothers. And Adamski's Space Brothers are Nordic aliens. They're blonde hair and blue-eyed, and they come from Venus or Mars or something like that. And this individual talks about this stuff to this day. The reason he talks about Adamski's Space Brothers is because he knew Adamski personally. And this is all part of the Anglo apparatus New World Order, the Space Brothers stuff, you know. But at the time, in the early 90s, and in fact, these pieces were actually all mailed out because there's no internet. So I'm reading a newsletter, actually, that went all around the globe. at the time. And this newsletter would have been mailed out months ahead of time, because if you're releasing a bi-monthly newsletter, let's say this particular one I'm thinking of that actually is now online, I just found it, it is from the middle 1990. July, August, or June, July. So you would have had to really have this way ahead of time and then mail it out for them to get it on time. It's common sense. It's kind of like the old newsletter thing. You got to do it. You got to plan a few months ahead of time. At a minimum, if it's bi-monthly, you're probably going to have to do a half a year ahead of time or something, get an idea of what you're going to be talking about. But they are very well funded at the beginning, and now they're self-funded. But at the time, they were talking like they had this new world order, and the Spaeth brothers were gonna, you know, there was gonna be a peace was gonna break out or something, and then there was all these different scenarios they were talking about, and kind of new age gobbledygook language, and getting people ready, getting all their subscribers and that whole entire wing ready for big events, basically is what they were doing, and they kept talking about these Spaeth brothers, and so I inquired. And kept actually reading the newsletters about the Spaeth brothers, and come to find out, according to the person that was a personal friend of Adamski, the Spaeth brothers, the Nordic aliens, I mean, that's what they were. You know, if you go and ask this guy what they look like, they're blonde hair, blue eyes, yada, yada, yada. They're from Venus or from Mars. They're still pumping this game to some extent. We're going to land and meet us and everything else at the time. But they had a colony. These guys had a colony in Russia. Now, these are Adamski's Spaeth brothers. These are Nordic aliens, and they have a colony in Russia. And this was in 1990, and this piece is online. I can't make this stuff up. I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not going to give you the name, because I just don't want to do it over an MP3. Not that I wouldn't do it if you emailed me. But Adamski's Spaeth brothers had a colony, according to him, in Russia going back 15 years. That would be 1975. 1990 minus 15 is 1975. And they've been there showing the Russians all kinds of new technology. And in this one piece, he talks about some pretty wild medical advances based on this type of physics that you're gonna be introduced to in the next few years. And he started talking about this. And in these newsletters, he's going into Adamski's Spaeth brothers. And the aliens, the Spaeth brothers, that's what they call them. And they're here to help us. And they had a colony in Russia. Now, before you start calling the funny farm for me, I don't believe they were actual Spaeth brothers. If you've listened to this whole podcast, I tell you exactly who they were. But at the time I was reading this, I thought it was hilarious. Because either I thought at the time, is the Russians pulling the rug out from underneath you? Because he goes on in other pieces, and you can question him personally about this. If you go, you can go talk to some of these guys. That the Spaeth brothers, and he's been around this stuff for decades. For decades he's been funded by our enemy. The Spaeth brothers had colonies. We're introducing some elements of America to this technology and some elements in Russia, and they had a colony in Russia, and they had other colonies around the world. Fascinating enough. Now, the Spaeth brothers, Adamski Spaeth brothers, all have one thing in common. They all speak German. That's the funny thing. It's the funny thing about it. Here you have a colony of Nordic aliens who all speak with a German accent. Now, at the time, I thought that was rather humorous. We know now that something else was afoot. Something else was going on. They never had their New World Order, and one of the funny reasons is the reason he actually gives you. He said at the time that the hierarchy, that's what he believes, some hierarchy of angelic beings are watching out for us. I doubt that very much, but in some hierarchy of angelic beings called off the meeting, the first meeting with humanity, and all these scenarios called it off because them and the Spaeth brothers thought it wasn't time yet. It wasn't time yet. So their New World Order was held up, according to their New Age attaché, by the Spaeth brothers. Now, that may sound ridiculous, and it is, because they're not really Spaeth brothers. There's much more rational explanation. You can say they're either Russian, or they're part of some other other distinctly Aryan New World Order. But they basically, we know now, they screwed them over. Yeah, they basically screwed them over. Their partners, who they thought their partners were after World War II, and if you've listened to this whole podcast, and if you've looked at any of the material I've linked you into, there's no doubt that they had a partnership with second generation Nazis, or Nazis after World War II. Let's call them Nazi International. They had a partnership with this group. Paperclip scientists. There was a partnership with them in Russia. And an element of Anglo elites went into cahoots with them, and they ended up screwing them over. In other words, the Team White Rabbit, elements of Team White Rabbit, has totally screwed over Team Pink Rabbit. So why I disagree with his particular scenarios now, the hierarchy in the Space Brothers, I do agree that they were screwed over or things were called off. And Team Pink Rabbit just learned about this sometime between 1998 and September 11, 2001, or 2002, right before the Second Gulf War, that they've been screwed over. So this is kind of an interesting conversation. I've alluded to this before, but I'll go one step further in this particular scenario. I'll talk about where these guys first screwed them over, where it came out actually in the New Age rhetoric. Not that the story is completely true, because there's a lot of lies to it. It's a lot of New Age propaganda for the New World Order. But there is a kernel of truth to the Space Brothers said it wasn't time. It's just kind of funny. So here you have the New Age attaché, totally funded by our enemy, in 1990, reading back in the past and reading what they said after these golden opportunities passed, saying that the Space Brothers and the hierarchy called it off. Now, whether or not it's true or not is speculative. I believe that someone screwed them over. I think we see that to be true now. Why? Because we have the Chinese in the equation. To answer your question correctly, I've got to give you a lead-in. The reason I have an ace in the hole is because I actually know who they were funding way back when and what they were saying back when they had partners. You know, you got all the paperclip scientists, Von Braun, Werner Von Braun running around, and he's partnering with the Anglo elites. He's dead now, but he was never their partner. They've been screwed over. And that much is crystal clear to me. Based on reading, all you have to do is read a little bit between the lines, because there's no reason in the late 80s, early 90s, my enemy shouldn't have had a New World Order. They control the media. They control what we see. If you've got advanced technology, you could easily roll it out on people and scare them or make them believe anything. And it's not that difficult to do. I mean, after all, when Europeans first started landing F-16s in various different South Sea islands, they thought they were from another world. You can only imagine what would happen if some big black triangle landed in Louisville, Kentucky. You don't know, you know, you really don't know what they're capable of. They have technology that they're getting ready to surprise the world with. Pink rabbits do and white rabbits do. But their partners were never really their partners. That's what comes out through the New Age guys. Now, what's interesting about this is World War III is often thought to play a key role. The reason for that is way my enemy thinks. World War I got my enemy the League of Nations. World War II got Team Pink Rabbit the United Nations. World War III, what they are looking to do, they are looking to convert, and the USA is the easiest apparatus, because the USA has an international private central bank. It is, by and large, it's a Federal Reserve System. It's the United States Federal Reserve System. It's a private central bank, but they are international now. It also has many international type of organizations, whether we like it or not. So it's very easy to dissolve America, in their minds, into a global super state. In other words, they're going to use World War III instead of getting the United Nations. They're going to use World War III for their particular global apparatus, to move into their global apparatus, which will have no nationality, no race, and all that other type of stuff. And based on the success of World War I, World War II, they assume that they can get it. They can do that. They're going to have to do a couple other larger scenarios, because obviously you're not just going to have a world war and bring the world together. That's where the knockoff alien invasions and the asteroid events and all this other crazy stuff they talk about, that's where that comes in. But that is the reason they want World War III, by and large. Many groups believe it will kick off a global community, a true global community, where the United States and the Anglo-American elites especially have played a huge, overwhelming role to bring about. Now, why China? China, quite simple. Let's go back in time. If you don't have your New World Order by early 1990, if someone we know in hindsight, and hindsight vision is always 2020, and it not only is 2020, it lends itself to the truth, that these Space Brothers, that this whole entire apparatus with Russia, someone there screwed them over. The Germans brought down the Berlin Wall. There was never going to be some peace deal breakout and some knockoff alien invasions. Whoever, Team White Rabbit ran a game on them. Their partners weren't really their partners. And so if you start getting an inkling that you've got to go with some other scenarios, well, you've got to do some things to keep America afloat. One of the ways they did this was with the first Gulf War. You know, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait under the auspices that the Western world thought it was okay, and then they attacked him for it. We have the first Gulf War in the early 90s, right? Right after this particular piece I'm looking at, right after this was written. I mean, these New Age groups are ready to go in the late 80s, early 90s, but they died down. Something happened. The hierarchy, the Space Brothers, or someone called off the big events for whatever reason. But what isn't speculative is what happened afterwards. We have the first Gulf War. And then after the first Gulf War, the mid-90s, we have the real Chinese push. The real Chinese social engineering by the Anglo elites that happened in Anglosphere, really starting in the mid to late 90s. I mean, China has a public, a government issued currency. They issue their currency debt-free. And they really have grown a lot since then. If you listen to any of my previous pieces, and I'm going to actually throw in another piece on this MP3, so just hold on, you're going to hear a little bit more about this. But the Chinese were going gangbusters. I mean, they're doing everything possible to give things away to China, to build China up into their last window of opportunity, which is right now, or they feel it's right now. It's do or die. Why they got cut off short, I'm guessing the answer is their Space Brothers. In other words, they don't have till 2050. We went over this 8 ways to Sunday. If you look at their actions in building museums in the Middle East, they don't have it. But it probably has something to do with these damn Space Brothers, whoever they are out there, telling them at the last minute, pulling the rug out from underneath them. And so now they were caught without a partner, and they let the Chinese in as a junior partner. They do everything under competitive cooperation. It looks like the Chinese, elements of Chinese and elements of the Anglo elites are competing, but they're not. They already have an agreement ahead of time because the Chinese were basically led into the game. They need the Chinese. They don't need the Chinese as much as they want you to tell, as much as they want you to think they need the Chinese. They're allowed to sit at the table, and everything in this New World Order goes to the New World Order, and the Anglo elites, especially the Anglo-American elites, have a huge seat at the table. They got the biggest seat at the table, and they can hand out other seats. So they handed out some other seats to China. And China's spiel is they export goods to us and they borrow debt. The actual Saudi oil deal is you price your oil in dollars and you're allowed to buy what you want to with your oil dollar, with your petrodollars. But the Chinese business class has played that part quite well. Now the Chinese have some problems internally because of their military. Their military is not all on board. Many of you have seen this stealth jet, which they got stealth technology apparently from Russia, according to them, and they brought out a stealth jet that looks similar to ours. And it took the president of China supposedly by surprise. I actually believe that because there's elements in the military. There's two sides to China, and they can go at it. They can go at it. Many people have heard of the rape of Nanking, or when the Japanese took over Nanking, the Chinese city, and how horrific it was. What you don't know is elements of China helped them. Yes, these groups are not all on the same side, so anything goes inside China. Now, do I think the Chinese are going to screw them over? Possibly. Possibly. One side of China wouldn't, because one side of China wants a seat at the table. Another side of China is another story. And we've went into this. I've went into this quite a bit. So you can go back and listen to the podcast if you have any questions about it. I can go into it from different angles, but there's a lot of unknowns within Asia coming into these events. But the Chinese are basically needed to some extent to pull off their game or to keep their game going. And in doing so, elements of China, Pink Rabbit Bankster, especially in China, have a seat at the table. Why did they give themselves a public central bank? Well, it makes good policy. It helps them grow fast, and you're going to have to grow China really quickly from the 90s to now. They would eventually shut it down and convert it to Pink Rabbit Central Bank, Red Hippo Central Bank. But there's two sides in China, so it is a tough call on that. But basically, they did it so they could grow quickly, just like Nazi Germany did it to grow quickly, just like you grow fast with those type of central banks. It allows, they don't have anything holding them down. They're issuing a currency debt-free, basically. I've went into this before. But there are many different speculations, and that's all it is, on why they gave them this private central bank, or public central bank, but it's quite, the answer is quite simple, to help them grow extremely quickly. For these events, to make them a suitable partner, to give them a seat at the table. But at the same time, when they dissolve this into their New World Order, they're going to have the forefront seat of the table. And the Jews are right there. The Jews are all over the place in this, the Pink Rabbit New World Order. The Jewish elites are. You can't have one without the other. They do a lot of legwork and they help on a lot of different areas. They're not the sole deciding voice like most white nationalists think. And you're going to find that out in the first round. But they are there. They are very active and very visual, especially when it comes to the Federal Reserve System and everything else. But the Chinese were built up, and they did a ton of social engineering in regards to propaganda about the Chinese are this and the Chinese are that, so much so that many white nationalists believe it. But going back in time, I don't worry about this New World Order, because at the most dangerous time for our race, these space brothers in this so-called hierarchy called it off. And if you didn't have it in the late 90s, you most likely aren't going to have it when my race is on a consistent message taking over Iceland. And Iceland is key ground, because that's where Europe meets North America. That's very special. It's good stuff. But if you didn't have it in the late 80s with all that going for you, you're most likely not going to get it now. It doesn't mean you're not going to try. It doesn't mean they're not going to go to World War III. They are, but they believe World War III will springboard this. As World War I sprung the League of Nations, as World War II sprung the United Nations, World War III will spring their informal American global empire into a formal global empire. That is the end of the nation state, these big regional blocks. And they have many different scenarios and versions. Most of my listeners have heard of the North American Union. They've always spun stuff like that out. They've always put stuff like that out. Some of them work, some of them don't. Some of the international institutions they want to dissolve national sovereignty into, and have been dissolving national sovereignty into them. Some of them have contradictory tones and messages, some people believe that's done for a particular reason. You know, it's a big buzzing and a whirling toward this New World Order. But they will go for it, and they've started this process of attacking Iran. It will start with an attack Iran, and after that, events will get out of their control. Now, whether or not China screwed them over, elements of China will, and elements of China won't. Whether or not, but the Chinese do not hold the cards. I was given an interesting piece on who owns the U.S. national debt, and this was written by, it looks like, Pierre Duplessis, and is talking about. It's from South Africa, and it talks about who the U.S. government owes money to. It talks about all the U.S. national debt, and these are calculations of 2011, and it'll give you some idea. 42.2% of the debt of the United States is owned by U.S. individuals and institutions, and I put quote-unquote institutions. 17.9% is owned by the U.S. Civil Service Retirement Fund. I'm sorry, that's another one. That's 6%. Let's see here. Social Security Trust owns 17.9%. I'm going to give you this news piece, and I want you to look at it. Look at how much debt is owned by U.S. institutions. Now, the Asians own quite a bit. The China owns 7.5%, and this is always played up. All other foreign nations own 11% together, and Japan owns slightly under China with 6.4%. If China and Japan teamed up, they could do something. But I want you to look at this and stop believing the propaganda. What they're telling you is China is the largest foreign holder of U.S. debt. That they are not the largest holders of U.S. debt. U.S. institutions could swallow the Chinese debt. Just look at it and get the fear out of your head. Because they always like to run the social engineering game of China's great, China's so wonderful, China's so powerful, and that's the game they play. They always play it. Right now, every Asian tiger, they played it. They call the Asian tigers, and the Asian tigers are built up, and then they're knocked the hell down. Yeah, they always do that. By the way, this goes back a long ways. This is one of their MOs. They will build any group they're building up. I do not have any envy for that group, because the greatest group on the history of the planet to be built up by Team Pink Rabbit is the Anglo-Saxons. The Anglo-Saxons, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, the Northern Europeans out of the British Isles, were built up into demigods under colonialism. Benjamin Disraeli talked about they were the finest race in the world, and so on and so forth. And they have tried to wipe them off the planet. That should tell you something. So I'm always leery about who our enemy is building up, because this is quite clearly our enemy. If they're building up China, look out. Look out. Part of them are doing it to make China acceptable as a partner for a New World Order in the eyes of Americans, to make China more esteemed in the eyes of America. And a lot of it has backfired because Americans are very leery about it. But part of it is done is what they do before they knock the hell out of a group. And I all you need to look is Anglo-Saxons, and you will get a great example of a group having the hell knocked out of them by the same people that built them up. They build you up so they can tear you down. They don't try to get into their minds. Getting into the mind of the pink rabbit is very difficult. But this is part of a social engineering apparatus, and it leaks out in the social, in the white nationalists. You know, on one end, they have legitimate claims about why are we giving all this stuff away, because they have to build them up. On the other end, they're worried to death about what type of deal elements of our government, like Team Jew Rabbit, has with the Chinese. On the other end, they're in somewhat of a consensus trance as they're believing what the media wants them to believe about how China owns our debt and about what China's doing. There are elements of China selling Iran everything underneath the sun for this war. So obviously Team Jew Rabbit ain't running all of China. You know, one of the interesting things in Chinese histories was they had these big student protests. They had these huge student protests. The actual student protests are called the Tiananmen Square. And what happened at Tiananmen Square is something that most people never pointed out. You had this huge student protest that became a huge riot at Tiananmen Square. Tiananmen Square is actually in Beijing. It's the center square in the center of Beijing, China. And it erupted into a huge fight between student protesters and the government. But one of the interesting stories that most of you, many of you have never heard, is why this really got out of hand. It got out of hand because the local general in charge of putting something like this down refused to do so. Told the Communist Party that he wasn't doing it. Simply for one simple reason, this particular general and many generals at the time in China were allowed into business. This was in 1989. And they were allowed into business. And generals that are running businesses at the same time have no interest in putting down a bunch of students who may be buying t-shirts from them and stuff. In other words, a businessman generally don't like putting down student protesters or getting involved in conflict. You never let your generals, especially, get involved themselves in businesses. You own shares in businesses and whatnot. So the general refused to do that. Refused to put down the protest. And what type of power would a general have to tell the Communist Party to take a walk? This particular general had a great deal of power in certain business interests. And so they had to bring in a general from several hundred miles away to put the thing down. A group of generals, some Chinese, local Chinese troops said, we're not putting them down. They're not putting them down. You know, they listened to their general and whatever. They brought in troops from somewhere else and general from somewhere else. And so after that, the Chinese Communist Party said, you know, we can't let these generals in business. But at the same time, they're making lots of money. You know, in the late 90s, China was starting to get up and moving, really get up and moving. By the late 90s, it was really up and moving. But in 89, 90, they changed their attitude toward generals in business. Generals weren't allowed in business after this. To some extent, it's really difficult and it's somewhat speculative to find out exactly what's going on internal with China. But what they did do was they gave the military more control over their own budget, and they placated them. They bought them out. They gave more control over their budget. They separated the Chinese business from Chinese military, and they gave them a lot more. They gave the Chinese soldiers a lot better pay, and they've had a huge budgetary growth. The Chinese military has had a huge budget, and that budget that is somewhat huge now for a developing country has developed since that time, has gotten a lot bigger as a percentage of their GDP and everything else. But they allowed the military a lot more control, a lot more new toys. They allowed them a lot more freedom military-wise. In other words, okay, General, you're allowed to do this military. In the military-industrial complex, you're allowed to control this and that. We don't want you in any traditional business because we don't want the type of interference. So there was a trade-off. They allowed them more power and more control over military elements. They allowed them more pay. They allowed them bigger budgets. And obviously, if you look at the budget now compared to 1990, there's a huge difference in Chinese military budgets, just what we know about it. But the generals started exerting more control over the military-industrial complex, which at the time was just, I mean, it was there, but nothing like now. The Chinese military-industrial complex is a lot bigger now. And that was, of course, one of the trade-offs. Well, this trade-off separated the Chinese military from the business elite. They were all combined to some extent. Now they're not. So many of the Chinese military, they have their fingers in pies, whether it be in the military-industrial complex or otherwise, but there is questions about whether they can even control them, whether they ever had, whether they belong to totally different separate apparatuses and whatnot coming into these wars, because they tend to be a lot more nationalistic and hardline than the business end. And they become more so since being disconnected. Not that they're any less wealthy or powerful. They're very wealthy and powerful. They just weren't allowed in any type of traditional Chinese business, because the military-industrial complex is by and large overseen by the military. And they do have some attachés to the Communist Party, but those attachés are serious hardliners. So I don't know how this is really going to play out, but you don't want your generals in business. And you don't want your generals to have too much power. And a lot of people believe that someone in China has so much power that they could run out that test jet when the Secretary of Defense from America was there just fooling around. You know, it takes a lot of power, especially if the head of China doesn't know about it. And I believe that could be true. In other words, this event with this Chinese, which is not quite done yet, this Chinese stealth fighter, which wouldn't be truly stealth because all the seams weren't lined up and everything else. It was just a prototype. That elements of the military could roll that out to upstage the actual the ruling party of China. That something like that could happen in China based on events post Tiananmen Square and the type of power the military may very well have that people say they have. But don't buy into all this Chinese stuff. It's pretty hard not to because they're shoving it down your throat. But if they were going to have their New World Order, there was a time and a place that our race was in a lot more danger. A lot more danger. Not that they won't try to do something crazy. They will. Not that they won't roll out the dog and pony show. They will. They will roll out the dog and pony show. The actual New Age group that was really active in the late 80s, early 90s, things kind of died off for them through the 90s. They kept everything alive. They kept funding everything. But over the past 3 years, past 5 years, they've been becoming more and more active. Over the past 2 years, since actually I started talking to you shortly thereafter, that fall when I told you in these podcasts, it looked like our enemy had come to some conclusions. They have been extremely active since then. The Space Brothers this go-round aren't going to land for some reason. They're not going to get involved. I have a reason why that the Space Brothers then are not the Space Brothers now, and they're not really from space either. But this is part of their act, and we will see once it opens up. And who screws who on exactly how this gets written, I don't know. But everything centers on America. Yeah, everything centers on America, and that's what they're focusing on. So if you see the red hippo, you might see the red hippo. He may be real. He may be real. He may come out in America. But I expect big surprises after Act 1. But the reason they want to go to World War III is because then they can roll their informal global empire, which Americans don't approve of, into a formal global empire and take their big seat at the table, and everyone that has helped them gets a seat as well. And there are many ways they can go about that. I was asked about specific alien invasion scenarios. Well, and in some scenarios, world peace breaks out, and, you know, everyone's got to get together to fend off an alien invasion, a la Independence Day. They don't make movies for no reason. There are other ones that, benevolent beings land and try to help us, after a huge, disastrous war. What is the last one they put out in the Hollywood? The Day the Earth Stood Still or something like that with Keanu Reeves was Alien Klaatu here to save us from our own environmental disasters. But it was really funny going back in time reading about their ozone BS, because now you're talking about their global warming BS. It's the same groups. The same groups are running stuff, and they're getting ready to roll it out. They're getting ready to go for it. It's do or die for them for some reason. But that's a little answer to your question on one of the general overviews, besides White Rabbit Genocide, on their particular spiel. It always involves some type of global sharing scheme. It's just communism is all it is. It has always involved social justice and all this type of stuff, their version at least. And it always involves usually using high-tech technology that they've kept out of the public's view. That is Team Pink Rabbit, and they are getting ready. They are loaded up. As Soros has told Glenn Beck, apparently Soros told Glenn Beck there, according to Glenn Beck, that you're either on board our New World Order or you're not. Well, we're not, but I can't. I'll be interested to see how they go for it. And it'll start with this war that's already started with Iran. I have no doubt that this war has started. And will the first start flying in Lebanon? Will there be a big... has the Chinese screwed over the Chinese? Are the Chinese getting ready to screw over Team Pink Rabbit? None of this is good for America, by the way. No, none of this is good for America. But we can pick up the pieces, hopefully. Hopefully. But that is a great little dog and pony show I'll roll out for you on an overview of why I believe they'll never get it. Because when I was most worried about them getting it, I looked back in time and saw all their groups drumming up at a period of time when they should have had it. I mean, you know, in the 80s, you're just a young kid walking around, most of you listeners, and they should have had this done because my race doesn't even have its own media. We don't have the internet. We don't have anything going for us, really, except some newsletter writers. You know, but these damn space brothers. These damn space brothers who always happen to speak English, Russian, with a German accent, and sometimes a handful of other languages. They always speak German, and they have colonies around the world, and they have wonderful technology they're helping us with. Oh, and I'm still reading this piece that he put out in 1990. The reason they don't let anyone else have the technology because it's too dangerous, and even the UN can't be allowed to manage it. I agree! We're in total agreement with the Space Brothers. But, this should be a wild ride, kids. Get ready. Hold on to your boggins. Hold on to your big white rabbit ears. But I'll put up a piece. All the pieces that I talked about in the previous piece, 59, will be up. And I will put up an actual piece about China's military comes into its own. It was written by Stratfor. Stratfor is neocon central. It is Anglo-American central on what they want all their viewers to think of in terms of international global analysis. But one of the parts of the piece that you need to read is an end to the Chinese miracle. Understand who's saying that. China doesn't necessarily hold as many cards as they want you to believe. And you can look at the U.S. debt, which won't be completely accurate, but you can read this news piece and look at the chart. A picture's worth 1,000 words. And don't believe all the hype. But there's a lot of speculation going on, and I throw my hat in the ring because this is the biggest event we're going to see in a long, long time. And this question and answer period, we're going to keep going with. And I will keep hitting and answering all your little questions here. But that is one period of time when they thought they should have had their New World Order, and they didn't. They didn't. And they had a lot more going for them than they do now. Yes, they did. And afterwards, of course, they got the Iraq War. You got the Iraq War and Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. And then, of course, you have the rise of China. Not incidental that this happened after they thought they had a New World Order and they didn't have one. And these are very sensitive topics around this group. So if you work around a Jew and they're on your nerves, and maybe it's a wealthy Jew or a Jew rabbit in the know, them especially are very sensitive to this. You know, if they know you're racially conscious or maybe an anti-Semite, they may prod you with different comments and stuff like that, or where's your race war or something like that. Always ask them, where's your New World Order? And you will see exactly what I mean. This is a very sensitive issue. That's their Achilles heel. They're more sensitive to that than outright anti-Semitism, than outright Holocaust denial. They're more sensitive to not having their New World Order, because what I just told you is that you can have everything going for you for 4,000 years, but if you ain't got a New World Order and you're a pink rabbit, you got big problems on this planet. Ain't no going back. Ain't no going back. But we'll continue this Q&A, and I'll keep going over these news events. But hopefully that was somewhat entertaining. So don't be getting all worried and upset. There was a time when I was really worried and upset, because that's what white rabbits tend to do. All hope is lost! All hope is lost! And precisely when you say that, usually events are on track that all hope will be anything but lost. If you're on a planet and you have white rabbits and they're not saying all hope is lost, run for it. Get off the planet, because something horrible is going to happen. But if you are on a planet where white rabbits are saying, oh, hope is lost, you probably have everything won. You just haven't seen it yet.
But that's what I've always concluded. And I'm speaking self-referentially because I used to do that too. But going back in time and reading about this group and how they've been screwed over, and that's my little pink rabbits, that's what's happened. You've been hammered, and you don't even realize it. Many elements still don't get it. But this is going to be wildly entertaining, and hopefully not too many dead rabbits, because these groups are crazy. Yes, they are. But we'll keep going. I'm going to talk about. I'll answer all the questions about old Doc Farrell next. And in closing here, I don't want to stay on the Chinese thing all day, but by and large, it just came across the. Came to my attention that Glenn Beck has went out of his way talking about the Chinese actually finding America, like the book 1421. It's a lot of partial truth and propaganda. China at one time did have big navies, and they did go around the world for an emperor, and then they went back home. Now, whether or not they originally found America, there's talk of ancient Europeans coming here, which is probably true. There's probably a lot of ancient people that came to America one way or shape and or form. Whether it be Hawaiians riding surfboards to California on an ancient tsunami or something. I'm sure you come up with some, cook up some story, but the idea that Glenn Beck's doing this now is not coincidence. The idea that Glenn Beck went over the top, he's talked about the founding fathers being multiracialist, all kinds of goofy stuff. And now, of course, he's on the Chinese thing, talking about how the Chinese started the Renaissance in Europe. It is totally goofy and off the wall, but it's part, he doesn't say anything by accident. He's told what to say, by and large, or turned in a direction, and they just wind him up and let him go. It wouldn't surprise me if an alien jumps out of his chest, or if he's remote-controlled from Israel or something. I don't know. The guy's insane. But this is Team Pink Rabbit getting up, gearing up and going for their agenda. It wouldn't surprise me if it starts out with China and Japan dumping our bonds or something like that. It'll start out with something crazy. I just don't know which extreme it'll go to. I don't know all their machinations. I just know the direction. And there's a handful, numerous different if-thens that come through my head at once. I'll know it when I see it. But they will start making moves, which they're doing within America, shaping the battlefield. And I think they have a limited window simply because of the financial problems they face. But there's not a problem that they'll look to. In these financial problems within America, they will look to exasperate and use them to their advantage one last time. And I don't know exactly the order of events or anything like that. We'll have to wait and see exactly when this war with Iran is going to, one morning they're going to start going at it. And I mean, they're really going to go at it. Now, whether there's a dust off in the Far East, I don't know. It really depends on stuff internal to China and what elements in China and Japan have planned. Because they got something cooking. And it's quite clear that the Germans have things cooking and have had things cooking for a long, long time. So we will keep this process going. I'm just giving you a heads up on typically why they use world wars. World War I was very good for an internationalist agenda. Brought out the League of Nations. World War II was even better. Brought out the United Nations. World War III, they want to move their covert American, it's kind of an American empire into an outright global empire and take a seat at the head of the table. And all these other groups they do business with also want a seat at the table. Now, there are many other groups that have no interest in it. And we've talked about that 9 ways to Sunday. But the Glenn Beck stuff is over the top, and I expect this type of thing to be going on now. In other words, Team Pink Rabbit is going to come out far and wide. Glenn Beck always talks about Soros. But in fact, by doing this, he's actually revealed himself to be on the same side. Because all these guys, even the head of Facebook, has a Chinese girlfriend. You know, this little Jewish guy that runs Facebook who, to me, doesn't, he's got like brown hair and big green eyes on the cover of, I think it's Time Magazine. Zuckerberg or whatever his name is, he runs Facebook. He's got a Chinese girlfriend. The head of Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, had a Chinese wife and have Chinese children. George Soros was dating Chinese women for a while, trying to find a suitable Chinese mate. This is the direction they're going with this. I've talked about this new Eurasian thing. But the Asians don't want anything to do with the African component. So I don't know how this is going to work out within their side because, Steven Spielberg has adopted Africans. So I don't know exactly where they're going with this one. This should be rather entertaining. But moving right along, one last news piece, and this is the funniest thing I've seen lately. It talks about the foreign gifts piled up for Obama's. This is kind of out of left field, but it's so funny I gotta talk about it. Foreign gifts piled up for Obama's in the first year. Now, if you give the president an expensive gift, like the Saudi, this guy's got some, the Taliban has a lot of expensive gifts. The Saudis gave him over $190,000 in luxury baubles in 2009. But generally, they got to turn it over to the National Archives or something along those lines. They can't keep anything. But anyways, the Taliban has got a lot of different gifts. You know, when it comes down to, Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi gave him gifts worth like $33,000. All the heads of state give each other gifts. It's nothing new. The President of China gave the Obamas a $20,000 silk embroidery of the first family. But the head of Saudi Arabia really leveled this guy with some gifts. I mean, I'll put up this news piece on the Twitter like I always do news pieces, and this is funny. The funniest thing on this is not that, you know, Shimon Peres gave him a girl releasing doves worth $8,000. Pope Benedict gave him a decorative coin with the pontiff's profile and several books valued at $7,000. The funniest one is, down toward the bottom, you got the poor Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Gave him about $500 in gifts and a $75 bottle of olive oil. But President Mahmoud Abbas doesn't have a whole lot to give. But the funniest one on here, the one that I just busted out laughing over, is Queen Elizabeth, the Queen of England. And this is funny. She gave President Obama a framed portrait of herself. I mean, here's this president. Here's the first mulatto president. He's getting gifts. He's getting all these, you know, $20,000 in embroidery gifts, $20,000 embroidery gift from China. He's got in, his wife gets a $5,000 Christian Dior handbag from Nicolas Sarkozy. Gordon Brown gives him all kinds of special Winston Churchill stuff valued at $16,000. The Pope gives him all kinds of stuff. He gets over almost $200,000 worth of stuff from King Abdullah. And from the Queen of England, he gets a $700 or $800 portrait of her. Some people need to know their place in the universe. And the queen has her way. The queen gets points for me because some people are that arrogant. Yeah, this is the president of the United States, who all presidents, by the way, it isn't just Taliban, but all presidents walk around the world and they get all these gifts unloaded on them that they have to turn over to the National Archives because you can't keep anything over like a few dollars. I don't know what it is, but they get to use it while they're in office and then turn over to the National Archives. But Queen Elizabeth gives him a picture of herself. And for one of the most arrogant people on earth, like the Taliban, that must be pretty humbling. It's kind of damn funny if you think about it. But I'll put this piece up. It's one of the funnier news pieces I've ever seen. What else do I want to say? Oh, I was talking about before about some of the crazy stuff that their New World Order is involved in. And I went over this before about chimeras, about animals. But nothing, to go off on a little tangent here, and there's something I told you I could point out to you. If any of you watch cartoons, and I've been doing my homework on a lot of cartoons because I have one under development, and in doing so, I watch Cartoon Network somewhat and finding out what these kids are looking at. And some of the stuff has kind of shocked me. Not that it's over the top, in your face, blatant, but it is kind of subversive. It's little things. And let me talk about two in general. There was a new cartoon called Generator Rex, R-E-X, and it's spelled just like it sounds, Generator Rex. It's about a young guy who has superpowers, which a lot of cartoons are about that. But the first episode was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Here is a young man on a planet, and the planet has only one, it comes out in the first little mini episode, only one pure human left. Everything on the planet was part animal. I mean, there's all kinds of white people and everything else, but everything's part animal. There's only one pure human left. Now, I'm talking about miscegenation, beyond miscegenation. We're talking about blending animals and humans. It's very disturbing, very wild stuff. And that's Generator X, and they have some pretty subversive stuff. I mean, that's one of the most subversive things I've ever heard of ever being put in a cartoon. You're talking about making a plant, turning a whole entire planet, making all the humans part animals. And it's pretty bizarre. The opening episode is it goes in some very, very bizarre areas. But that's how our enemy operates. So they don't, I'm kind of taken for task from the alternative news research crowd to say, well, they're not just talking about blending humanity. And I went into that, though, in all fairness. But the first step is to kill our race, or to blend our race, or to have a totally chimerical humanity is the first step. And it has everything to do with our race for one reason or another. And it goes in some weird areas, but the stuff that they put out, the stuff that they put down the track in the media, and obviously if you're going to look to impress someone, you're going to look to impress kids first, and kids watch cartoons, that's common sense. And another one that is outright bizarre, that I thought was odd, that's done by a black cartoonist, but you wouldn't know it by watching it, supported by our enemy, is Ben 10 Alien. Ben 10 Alien was an interesting one. I watched most of the first season, I watched the final episode, and I actually have it on... I have it recorded. It is, and I had to see it, to believe it. But it is about, there's two groups going at it. There's Ben 10, and Ben 10 is defending Earth. And Ben 10 has this little comrade, this little alien that helps him out called Azmuth, or something like that. And he appears and reappears, and he's basically, his planet got annihilated by this group called the Hybrids. And the Hybrids are considered the most purest race in the universe, or they think themselves as the purest race. They're presented as, you know, holier than thou racist and whatever. But they don't look anything like humans. But they are huge, they're extremely strong, and they have all kinds of technological superiority. But they destroyed Azmuth's planet. For what reason, we don't know, and they destroyed like a million other species for not being pure or something along those lines. So Ben 10, of course, looks like a normal white rabbit. He looks like a normal white kid. In fact, him and his cousin, they look damn near perfect. Perfect Aryan, if you will. But they are blended on some level. And in reality, you could have a white rabbit with part animal genes that ends up looking just like us. I mean, if you want to go down this road, you could really go down there. But little Azmuth is looking to get even with the hybrids, and all hell breaks loose on Earth. And the way they do it is they open up a big stargate. And into this jump gate, which little comrades of the hybrids are building. They can look just like any human, but they're out building a big jump gate or a stargate to bring the hybrids in so they can wreak havoc on Earth. And kill everything here or totally redo the human race or whatever it is they're doing. But it ends with Azmuth, they talk about all humanity is a bunch of mutts, all humanity is blended and all this other type of stuff, which is their propaganda. Obviously there's some pretty pure elements left on this planet. In spite of the egalitarian nonsense, people tend to like their own. And I'll have more to say about that in a minute when I go into academia. But Azmuth gets even with the hybrids by building a jump gate, and he goes back into their world, and he mixes them up. He blends them. He blends all the hybrids, winning the big galactic battle. But this two concepts of blending and... blending and purity and all kinds of crazy alien stuff, pretty much out there. But Ben 10 Alien, the finale is something to see, especially if you know anything about the Sumerian text. It's rather entertaining where they're going with this stuff, and also very subversive, obviously. Obviously very subversive. I was asked what is the best cartoon out there. The only thing coming close that's even entertaining is Johnny Test. Johnny Test is about some blonde-haired, blue-eyed, little perfect flame-haired Aryan with his talking dogs, and he's got two brilliant sisters that are mad scientists who both have red hair and blue eyes. He's got a dad. His dad stays at home and takes care of stuff, and his mom runs a business. So in that way, it's kind of a, what do you call it? I don't know. I forget exactly the scientific word for that when women do everything in society and men stay home or whatever. That part is a little backwards, but it has some really funny elements in it. As far as cartoons go in modern times, it has some really comedy elements in it. The antagonist in the actual cartoon is Bling Bling Boy. And Bling Bling Boy is a little white nigger, as they call him. And he is comedy. He's always getting taken to school. And you'd have to see it. It's as far as cartoons go, it is the most racial cartoon out there, and it's, you know, all these little white girls doing all kinds of crazy inventions, and Johnny Test doing all kinds of crazy stuff. It could be better, but it's not as bad as Generator Rex and some elements in there, or Ben 10 Alien. It's pretty interesting. In the next part, I'm going to answer your questions about the Dr. Farrell. I'm going to talk about Dr. Farrell here for a second. And now a word from our sponsor.
Have you ever said to yourself, gee, I would love an undercover lover? Or maybe you said to yourself, gee, I would like to be an undercover lover. We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. Academics are an interesting group. In the paleoconservative community or white nationalist community, you have several that are a handful that have become quite renegades, quite radical, in so much that they've been denied PhDs or under assault all the time for their research or for speaking their mind. Academia, especially the university scene across Western civilization, I include all of Western civilization, has been quite interesting in the past 50 years because there's been an outright assault on them from the beginning, post-World War II, by the new social engineering schools, whether it be the Frankfurt School or Tavistock. And once, of course, you brainwash professors, well, then their professors are going to turn around and brainwash the students, who then in turn become teachers and professors. And they were targeted specifically for this reason. And listeners of mine know that once you get under a particular type of propaganda, after so many years, it's over with. It's totally over with. It's totally done. True information won't mean anything to them. You'd have to totally redo everything, and since most of them have tenure, they become impossible to deal with, for good or ill. But when it comes to professors, they are by and large very biased on two particular levels, and they tend to be liberal, very, very liberal, ultra liberal in many outlooks. In America, they would be traditionally democratic. In Europe, they're basically communist, most of them, but by and large, they're biased against business. Not necessarily big business, but they're biased against business as a whole. And their biases, from my experience, tend to be toward egalitarianism, the dreaded ism. But those are two biases. Sometimes they get around those biases. That doesn't mean they can't find the truth. Some academic, some white academic, some European academic might break out. But by and large, they come with those biases. You can't be in a university setting in somewhere like America or even like Germany and not and overcome the type of propaganda that's been leveled at the place. And, you know, most of it's done by professors to professors from a lack of moral standards. There is no moral standards anymore. You're dealing with a group, and in America, this is especially funny, that in the name of academic freedom, they'll deny you a PhD. In the name of academic freedom, they won't allow you to teach a particular curriculum. In the name of academic freedom, they'll give you an F on a paper for not parroting their views. In the name of academic freedom, they will do outrageous things. It always kills me when academics I know start talking about big business, because in many respects, academia in America is the biggest business I've ever seen. It is a serious racket, where in the name of academic freedom, they could do things where no CEO could ever get away with it. You know, they all sit in their little fiefdoms, and you can't really fire them because they have tenure. You can't really do anything with them. And tenure means that they can teach at that particular facility forever. And I forget the whole entire thing, but all the ins and outs of tenure. But once a professor in America has tenure at a university, there's nothing you can really do about them, for good or ill. And it is hilarious to see them talk about and worry about big business. It is kind of funny. And as far as egalitarianism goes, never has an ideal been such a colossal failure on a global scale. I mean, just recently we had Sudan get broken up.
Why? Because egalitarianism doesn't work. And the academics will state facts, and they could be absolute facts. You know, all Homo sapiens are related to the same amoeba 3 billion years ago, which obviously doesn't matter. If we're related to even the same Adam and Eve, all mankind is related to Adam and Eve. All rabbit kinds, all the rabbits on the planet are related to the same Adam and Eve 10,000 years ago. It really doesn't matter if you still have to split up Sudan today. It really doesn't matter if the biggest problem in the world over the last 50 years is ethnic conflict, and this ethnic conflict goes hand in hand with egalitarianism. But it is kind of funny, and of course we always point out the obvious. No one's flooding Africa with non-Africans and telling them we're all related to the same amoeba 3 billion years ago, and because we're all related to the same amoeba 3 billion years ago, we're going to create a blended humanity in only Africa. No one's flooding Guatemalan with non-Guatemalans and saying, you know what, we're related to the same amoeba 3 billion years ago. No one does these things. I always do that around academics, and it drives them crazy doing the mantra because it's true. And it's a knee-jerk reaction. Many of them realize egalitarianism is a failure. When you're in that particular environment, what can... So they're always biased against big business, and they're always biased toward egalitarianism, although, you know, one is a failure and one's ridiculous. Being biased toward big business is very common. It's very common. It's becoming more common because of it's basically what I would call a sign of the times. Now, is there a legitimate criticism? Could they go into legitimate criticism against, let's say, corporate law or the corporate person? Well, sure. Most of them don't have the particular skill set. You go deep into, I believe it's canon law, or early Christian law, early Christian tradition. It really goes back a long ways in Western civilization. But the reason they don't like big business is because they want the money and the power for themselves, and they want to centrally plan things. When you start digging into it, and Bob Whitaker over at WhitakerOnline.org was a PhD candidate at UVA, which is a pretty big school for economics. And he has some pretty funny stories. But the best academics are always renegades. They're always renegades. They always either get thrown out or have to leave or run off from a university or not granted tenure or not granted a PhD. They're the best because they'll actually write something useful or write something interesting late in the 20th century, early 21st century. That's what you got to look for, in my opinion, a renegade. It doesn't mean they necessarily won't do a knee-jerk bias toward egalitarianism, although Bob Whitaker wouldn't. It doesn't mean that they won't say something to irritate you about go against free enterprise just for the sake of wanting their own power. Every once in a while, one of them will be in hot pursuit of the truth with a reasonable prospect of finding it in whatever field they're in. But it becomes quite interesting. I'm asked for my views on big business all the time. You can make arguments against the corporate person, this type of thing. I view it as a sign of the times, to be quite honest with you. Right now, everyone listening to this will have some small business person in their area that is an absolute thief. It's true. It's a sign of the times. I mean, there's a local business here. It's a hardware store. And if you've been in a hardware store in business for the past 50 years or what, however long he's been in business, he's competing with some tough big box stores in the hardware business. And his prices aren't that much higher for a local neighborhood store. But he fixes lawn equipment, and he fixes snow blowers, and he fixes lawnmowers, that type of thing. And if you've ever gotten the bill from him, you realize that you take it in for a tune-up or something, he ends up fixing all this other stuff and trying to charge you for it. So he's kind of known as a thief, but he's a small businessman. The reason he's not in jail is because he's not running a large corporation. Because if he were running a large corporation, well, he would most certainly be in jail. There's no way. It would be irresistible. It would be too much temptation for him not to thieve everything in sight. But everyone listening to this has a small business in their area that is run by a thief. It's the sign of the times. Big business is what it is because it's a sign of the times. You could talk about corporate law, but the reason that hasn't been amended is because of the sign of the times. And when we talk about business is no different than anything else, business people, in so much that they're subject to the same amount of propaganda and brainwashing. Even though they're smart people and they think they're smart like academics, they still fall prey to brainwashing just like everyone else. And most of it's, there's no moral standards there either. You know, most of it's done by business people to business people because of lack of moral standards. And the whole situation goes downhill. but everyone listening to this will have a small business in their particular area that are a bunch of thieves. Now, that does that mean free enterprise doesn't work? Of course not. Of course not. You'd be insane to talk about scientific materialism working. But, you know, every once in a while an academic can have a legitimate crank complaint against some particular business practice or corporate law or some particular the corporate entity, the corporate legal structure in general, but it is pretty rare. Generally, when they come out against the Hadron Collider or when they come out against something some business is doing, they only come out in the Hadron Collider. Bob Whitaker was talking about this. The Hadron Collider is in Europe is this huge project, and the academics only came out against it after they spent $3 billion. They gained a great deal of power. They didn't come out before they had all that money, before they had the budget, before they had the power. Academics tend to do that. They want that money and power for themselves. And of course, common sense dictates to never trust anyone that wants money, that wants power over top of you. Whether it be, some corporate tycoon or some academic, some local wonk who wants to sit on a central planning committee. But that is the way of academics. In the white nationalist community or paleo conservative, there's academics as well. And the academics, generally come on the scene through accidents. Dr. Kevin McDonald, I'll put up a link to his Wikipedia, is someone out in America, and he's at, he's a professor of psychology at Cal State University Long Beach. And he is, he's best known for his use of evolutionary psychology to inform his study of Judaism as being a group evolutionary strategy. And he ends up, this is a particular field, psychology, and he ends up writing a book, investigating the Jews, just happenstance. He just ends up writing a book about them, and all hell breaks loose. But he's someone that writes quite a few articles for websites like vdare.com, that's VDARE.com, and various other venues. But he is an interesting academic who, in my opinion, came into that particular, came under assault by sheer accident. Sheer accident. By just simply writing a book about his opinion about Jews, basically presenting a hypothesis, if you will, in regards to evolutionary psychology and such a thing, and that type of thing. And you'll hear his books mentioned, like The Culture of Critique. And there's other academics, too, as well. Someone that didn't end up getting a PhD like Bob, but unlike Bob, he's actually in jail right now. This gentleman, Germar Rudolph, and that's Germar Rudolph. And of course, he is in jail in Germany, and he's an interesting character because as a young man, he was employed at the Max Planck Institute for Solid State Research in Stuttgart, Germany. And of course, he was a PhD candidate at... at the University of Stuttgart. Sorry about that. He was a PhD candidate in the University of Stuttgart. And of course, they demanded, he was asked by a lawyer in Dusseldorf, to do a particular scientific study, some type of chemical study. And he was at the time getting, a PhD in chemistry from University of Stuttgart. And they, of course, don't exactly hand those out every day. So basically, he was asked to do a study by an actual attorney. And he assumed that the study he would do on Auschwitz would confirm the actual government's history. Because my understanding is he's a German, and Germans generally learn their history, that they're evil people and that they did all these things. And he assumed that the study would reinforce this view. The official party line on Auschwitz. Well, lo and behold, the study did not. The study did not, and all hell broke loose. And then, University of Stuttgart demanded that he retract his application for his final PhD examination, or else the university would deny it. And all hell broke loose behind him. And then, of course, after that, he becomes quite an anti-Semite. He ends up writing several different reports on the Holocaust, several different reports on particular World War II, or what we will label 6 million revisionism. He becomes one of the scientists in that particular field, and he was chased all over the world and eventually ended up in jail. So he's just a normal German boy going to get a PhD. The next thing you know, he writes a report. He finds out something different than he should have found out, and he ends up publishing it, and all hell breaks loose. Which, you know, for a scientist, you know, you're in a Galileo type situation. But these are not uncommon to the paleoconservative or white nationalist, especially when you get into the 6 million denial, what is known as a Holocaust denials, or what the Anti-Defamation League and such call them. They end up usually going to jail because it's illegal in Germany to question the official history. It's illegal in Germany to write books questioning the official story, whatever it may be. But he ended up doing that and going to jail. They eventually caught up with him, and he paid the price for it. He's still in jail to this day, and I'll put up his Wikipedia. So in the white nationalist community, it's not really, or paleoconservative, or the 6 million denier, it's not uncommon to have a renegade PhD candidate, and even Bob Whitaker is a renegade PhD candidate. He never finished it. It's not uncommon to have these. I'm often asked about. I use one PhD in general. In general, when it comes to alternative news and research, and his name, of course, is Dr. Joseph P. Farrell, and he has a PhD from Oxford in patristics. And I'm always asked about his renegade background, that you know, he got ran off from this university or got into it with that university and all this other type of stuff. And I guess he's been controversial at a couple of universities. And my explanation is that he wouldn't be worth a damn if he didn't. Universities in America and the Western civilization in general, maybe the Russians, some of them are still okay, but in Western civilization in general, outside of Russia. In America, in particular, if you have a professor writing books and he's not getting run off or not facing a lot of criticism, generally they're not saying anything original and new, and that's tragic. But I'm always asked that, and I find it rather entertaining, because when I first was handed his book to read, I actually put it off. And one of the things that caught my attention was some of the things he's saying, and I'm going to go into Dr. Farrell in one of the next podcasts again. But one of the things that when I put off reading his particular book, because he was another PhD writing about Nazis. Well, I've read all kinds of PhDs that talk about the Nazis, and none of them are really interested in the truth. They're interested in some version of the truth, or just selling books, which is fine. But generally, I put off reading them. But in his particular case, his type of thinking, the type of thinking that he was pointing out something original, and. I was pointed out that someone let me know that he's pointing out something original, that you should really read this. You know, they called me up after the fact and asked me if I read the book, and I said no. And it was, I believe, Reich of the Black Sun. And I said no. He's another PhD writing this and writing that. And they're saying, well, you know, they pointed out his thinking process, and then they gave me the big kicker. Oh, he's been run off from a few universities. He's controversial. And I said, oh. If he's getting run off from universities in America for some reason or another, maybe he has something original to say. But I'll talk to him. I'll talk about him more in another episode. But I'm always asked about academics like him, because on one end you have he probably has tendencies, I'm sure he does, toward egalitarianism, and most likely against big business. But in his case, he wouldn't be interested in power over anybody. He seems like more of a pacifist, which is not uncommon in the 6 million denier industry. We have Ernest Zundel, and he's a pacifist too. So that's not uncommon even in paleoconservative or white nationalist circles. That's not uncommon to have something like that around, even a pacifist, believe it or not. Ernest Zundel. I'll put up his particular Wikipedia too. He's another one that's been in jail. I don't know that he has a degree. I don't have his credentials. I don't know that he has a PhD. I don't have his credentials in front of me, but he is a historian to a certain extent. And of course, And there are several around the white nationalist community. I'll post up Wikipedias for several that come to mind, but most of them are controversial. If they have a PhD, they're controversial. If you go against the norm, you're going to be controversial. Dr. Joseph P. Farrell, I can get around his egalitarian tendencies, and I can get around his, believe it or not, tendencies against big business if he can find me the truth on what he's particularly writing about. You know, there's a lot of people in Western civilization with a lot of qualifications. Not that those mean anything. But a qualification means you can do something if you chose to do it, but they really don't choose to do it because it involves going against the established goal or the system. And in a university, the little departments are like little fiefdoms. And if you go against that, well, you're going to get some friction. And so that's actually what I look for. That's what I look for. Most people want to run from friction. Well, I want to read their books. But we're quite used to that in paleoconservative. Most of the others, Europeans don't like conflict. So when you see someone causing a lot of trouble, you shake your head and go, wow, you know, he's just a glutton for punishment. Like Dr. Kevin McDonald, I mean, they attack him to no end. Right now they want to end the tenure process in America, I think, just to get rid of him. But it is entertaining when you have someone that can cause friction and offer something new on a particular subject matter, because all Europeans are capable of doing it in one particular field, even if they don't have a PhD in it. You don't necessarily need a PhD. And that's another problem with Western civilization. Everyone thinks you need some big degree in something to do that particular function. You don't. You don't. It means someone could do something if they chose to. Like Dr. Farrell, he has a PhD in patristics. He knows a great deal about ancient languages and different pitfalls. He could choose to blow us away with stuff, but he has to make that choice. He has to choose to go for it. He has to choose to write about something like Nazis. And, of course, he has to make a choice of trying to be unbiased and try to find the whole truth instead of some version of the truth. And that's not exactly easy for a lot of people to do, but it only takes one to set it on fire, set that particular industry or that particular, his genre is alternative news and research, and he set the place on fire. But old Bob Whitaker, right now I had to put off a particular project. My job was to, they wanted me to do an MP3 for Why Johnny Can't Think. Why Johnny Can't Think is a caustic book. It is a caustic book. The foreword's by a famous paleoconservative, Joe Sobran. And Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood by Robert W. Whitaker. It's just a caustic book against the actual academics. It's against the academics. On some level, I view the academics as a sign of the time because they were so targeted with social engineering. I mean, how can you be, you know, they're targeting European children for extinction. Obviously, you spend that type of money to put up a Tavistock or a Frankfurt School. You spend the type of money to put out the books. You're going to wreak some havoc. But in this particular book, Why Johnny Can't Think, if you guys haven't read it, I would suggest you read it. But I put off actually transcribing the book into MP3s simply for now. Simply for now. We had a new website going up, and we have all this stuff going on with the in-game, and I have all this stuff going on with the characters for the cartoon and all this stuff going on. So Bob said, put it off. Don't do it. Don't get distracted. But it has some fantastic mini chapters, and the chapters are no longer really than Bob's pieces on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, and it's linked on my website. Go to Bob Whitaker on my website, and you can go right to whitakeronline.org/blog. It's his particular blog, but the pieces in the book are very short. They're no more than two or three pages, but they're fantastical, like Dr. Joseph Goebbels, constructive social critic, ? And he compares and contrasts Noel Ignatieff at Harvard with Joseph Goebbels. And the point he's making is that Joel Ignatieff and Joseph Goebbels have a lot in common. The only difference between them is who they want genocide. You know, Noel Ignatieff says all whites have to go. All whites have to be annihilated. Where Dr. Goebbels said all Jews had to go. And it is that caustic stuff like that that he attacks academia, current academia in America. He calls it the professor priesthood, and the god of the priesthood is actually Hitler. Yeah, Hitler's the god of the American professors. Yeah, the professor priesthood has a god, and this god is Hitler. Most of us think that gods are good or righteous or something like that, but their god is evil, because everything Hitler was for, they're you would have to actually read the book. I'll tantalize you enough with that. But academics are an interesting case in late 20th century America. Every once in a while, you get someone that'll do something interesting, but the reason they become interesting is usually because they're renegades or radicals, or they go against the status quo. Because they're still European, deep down inside, some of them will jump out and try to find the truth in spite of the consequences. And even if you end up in jail, like the Mr. Rudolphs in Germany right now, or you end up attacked every day like Kevin B. McDonald, or you end up getting shown the door at some university, like Dr. Farrell getting into it with him, or however it ended up at his last university professor. He worked in a gambling casino after that as a floor manager of some type. But these are all interesting characters and interesting, different projects that they're all up to. But, from my perspective, at least. But generally, it starts with being a renegade. It starts with walking out. It starts with putting your saying, you know, this is a bunch of BS, and I'm not taking it anymore, and I want to do what I want to do. I want to talk about this, or I want to talk about that. But, you know, academics always kill me. They always kill me. But there is no group that has done more to cause harm to Indo-European children than the modern professor priesthood, as Bob Witter calls it. Part of that was because they were so targeted by social engineering programs, and part of it is just that a lot of them are by and large evil. They've gone the way of the dodo. CEOs, I think, are a lot easier to get rid of than the local tenured professor in the sociology department, whose standard policy is, you know, white rabid genocide, the death of the white race, as they say. That's their whole priority. Like I said, in the name of academic freedom, they'll ban you. They'll ban your curriculum. They'll deny you a PhD. They'll deny you a PhD. They'll do all kinds of things, all in the name of academic freedom. And this extends all across Western civilization now. These actual social engineering schools, some of the early pilot programs are what destroyed Germany. I mean, they put in place the educational system in Germany post-World War II. And in the name of academic freedom, you'll have men like Mr. Rudolph in jail for writing a chemistry report for an actual attorney, writing a chemical report that doesn't toe the party line. But, you know, science is science. But it is a fascinating subject matter. And if you ever get a chance, you can buy Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood by Robert W. Whittaker on Amazon. It's a fantastic book. It's very easy to read. A child could read it. It is caustic. It is the most anti, it is so against modern academia. It is caustic. Caustic stuff. And some of it's funny, some of it's humorous. You might find some of it you might even disagree with, but it is outright caustic. If you've ever got into it with a professor, or if you've ever had it out with a professor, or if you're a PhD candidate that got shown the door because they didn't like your thesis in the name of academic freedom, well, then you might want to read his book. You might enjoy certain parts of it. But he's someone that knows from experience. But this is the end of this Follow the White Rabbit. This is a particular update during the Egyptian disaster. During the Egyptian disaster, rowing disaster, it looks like a disaster to me. We'll have to see how it turns out. The quest for democracy. We'll have to see how that turns out, and we'll have to see how this Stuxnet worm in Iran turns out. They're talking about if they start up the reactors, the Russians are saying it could be another Chernobyl. Israelis still haven't claimed the attack, and there's a reason for that. It's an act of war. One can only imagine what would happen if you unleashed a computer virus in an American nuclear installation, or a British nuclear installation, or a French nuclear installation. It would be an outright act of war. That's why they're not claiming it yet. Which is pretty intelligent to do. It could be certain violations of international law, go on, so on and so forth. One can only imagine what it would be if it causes a huge disaster. But this is still an ongoing process as we pick up speed in the end game. that's what you're seeing. Everything's picking up speed, and there's a great deal of confusion, but there seems to be a theme, and that theme is Iran is the next stop for the fur to start flying. And I have a feeling this Egyptian scenario will not go the way that the elite want. Once you get their process, they got their machine in motion, their New World Order machine, and once you unleash that machine and expect A, B, C, D, and E to happen, well, you might end up with H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. That's just common sense. Once you unleash a machine like democracy in Egypt, you don't know what's going to happen. It comes down to organization, and right now the most organized party is the Muslim Brotherhood. But this type of thing, in my opinion, won't end up going well as we go into the war with Iran. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see, and we'll keep this conversation alive. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in and to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening. So cold, why did you stay?